You're listening to Beyond Bourbon Street, an insider's guide to New Orleans. Beyond Bourbon Street is the podcast where we explore the food, music, culture, places, and people that make New Orleans unique. Whether you are planning a trip, living in New Orleans, or simply wanting a taste of the Crescent City from wherever you are, you've come to the right place. And now, your host, Mark Bologna.
Hey y'all, this is Mark. Welcome to episode 165. Today's episode's all about the American Italian Cultural Center and Museum. We'll learn what it is, why it exists, and what they offer, among other things. The last show is an interview with Neil Bodenheimer, who's the owner and partner in several local bars, as well as the co-chair of the foundation that puts on Tales of the Cocktail, which is ending today as we record this. It's the largest event of its kind focused on the spirits industry. If you missed that episode, go back and give it a listen. I think you'll enjoy it. Before we jump in, let me talk about the people that make this show possible. Support comes from the Historic New Orleans Collection, the city's premier history museum, which is located at 520 Royal Street in the French Quarter. They're just wrapping up as we record this. Until August 28th, they've had this great exhibit called French Quarter Life, People and Places in the Vieux Carré. And it's an exhibit of about two dozen works of art that kind of covers 150 years of everything from the street food vendors, which ties in today's podcast a little bit, to Preservation Hall and the jazz, just kind of different takes on the city and different forms of art. So that runs to August 28th. But then I'm also excited about starting in October, they're going to have a new exhibit about Spanish New Orleans and the Caribbean. In between, they have lots of great permanent exhibits, so go check it out at hnoc.org to plan your trip. Today's episode is also sponsored by our Patreon supporters. If you love the podcast, the Facebook group, and the work I'm doing, please consider becoming a monthly supporter. You can find out more at patreon.com/beyondbourbonst. We have plenty of perks at all levels, and if you join at the $10 level or higher, we'll mention you on an episode. Finally, last but not least, I have a book. I wrote the Beyond Bourbon Street Insider's Guide to New Orleans, which officially released on May 1st. You can find it online at major retailers like Amazon, Bookshop, Barnes & Noble. But you can also find it locally at all the bookshops, Garden District, Blue Cypress, Octavia, as well as at the OW, which is a sort of a combination antique, secondhand furniture, upscale store at 2850 Magazine Street, owned by our partners, The Occasional Wife, and just recently, NOLATshirtClub.com, also a partner of ours on Magazine Street. I went in and signed about 30 copies, and they have them available in the store as well as online, and we'll put links in the show notes so you can order an autograph copy if you want online. If you love the show and the podcast in New Orleans, please consider picking up a copy. And for more information on the book, you can check out episode 157. So with all that out of the way, let's talk about the main topic. Again, I wanted to introduce you to a subject that's been on my list for a while, the American Italian Cultural Center and Museum. I want to talk about the history, the impact of Italians in New Orleans, and mostly get you primed to want to come stop by when you're in town. I'm joined by the chairman of the Cultural Center, Mr. Frank Maselli. How are you?
Good afternoon, Mark.
I'm glad to. I know you're a busy man. I'm glad to have you with me today.
And welcome to you here.
Yeah. You know, we were just talking before we came on air. I've been in here a bunch of times, but pre-COVID. I want to get into things you guys do, but let's talk about the newest first. One of the things you guys did during COVID is you completely renovated the museum.
Well, actually, we did it right before COVID. So, you know, this place was founded back in, I think it was 85 is when it opened. And it was my dad and a bunch of his friends of that generation. They were mostly first-generation Italians, first-generation Americans. And some actual immigrants at the time, too. So they opened this, what I think they envisioned it as a club, as another mm-hmm. Italian club, because that's what, you know, in the early days, all the Italian groups formed clubs, and that's where they hung out and whatever. So this was going to be a club for all the clubs, the museum, the American Italian Museum and Library. So we put American first. That was my dad's thought, that we just we put American first because we're Americans, you know. It really carried on that way, you know, until, they all started, you know, passing on. And my dad died back in 2009. And so it was kind of left to me to pick up the ball and run with it, and which I was happy to do. And I wasn't sure what we were going to do with it. But I did realize that things had changed. Mm-hmm. There were no longer a lot of 100% Italian.
Yeah.
Americans like myself. I'm actually 100% four grandparents, all from either Sicily or southern Italy. And so, you know, I wanted to give it a broader appeal. So the American Italian Cultural Center. So I want to appeal to anyone who likes Italian and American Italian culture. You know, I'd say at least half the people that participate in all our programs are non-Italians, mm-hmm. but they like, you know, they like Italian culture. They like hanging out with some Italians. You know?
I also think it's consistent. So I'm 50% Italian and then French and German on the other side. But the same thing, my great-grandparents immigrated turn of the century, you know, big immigration time coming to New Orleans, an Italian population. We were talking before we came on, I had a big Italian family on my dad's side. You know, and I think that tie, it also makes sense now as you get to my generation, your generation, and then my generation. And sure, you have fewer 100% Italians or Sicilians or wherever people may have come from, but there's still that real tie into the connection. You know, we still host in my home a large dinner for about 60, 70 people for St. Joseph's Day. You know, and I also think that idea of the club was very, sort of gets back to the roots, right? When Italians came to immigrate to the United States and in big numbers came here, like so many other groups, they faced discrimination and they faced real challenges and bound together with benevolent organizations and clubs and those sorts of things.
That's right. You're right on. And yeah, we want to appeal. I find my friends who are even a quarter Italian, even an eighth Italian, they still want to be involved to an extent. They still want to celebrate their culture, maybe not to the extent that some of us professional Italians do, but they still want to be involved.
Sure.
They want to either study Italian language, become a dual citizen, go on a trip, go to a concert, you know, come visit the museum, see where their grandparents came from, stuff like that. So.
Well, and we're going to break that apart a little bit because I think you guys have achieved that sort of, you're the center of and really a resource for Italians, Italian-Americans in the city and beyond. Anthony and I were talking about people from all over come to make use of your services to see what's going on. But let's talk a little bit maybe first about the museum, because again, as you said, just before COVID, you guys updated it, and it's a really modern, interactive museum.
Well, actually, the process started, like I said, back in 2009 when my dad died, and I stepped in. And I immediately had to hold, we had a big fundraiser coming up, our annual fundraiser coming up right after he had passed away. So I had to step in and make sure that happened. But so then, you know, it was a thought process, okay, what am I going to do here? What are we going to do here? Because, you know, it's going to be on me. So, you know, what do I want to do? And I want to bring it up to date. I want to make it more appropriate to the time. And so it took me several years. Okay, well, no, within about a year or 2 years, I did hire a museum designer who is also the same designer that works on the World War II Museum.
That's interesting because it has that aesthetic.
It's Gallagher and Associates, like the biggest museum designer in the world, okay? So, well, because I had good contacts at the World War II Museum, so they got him to come meet with me, and really a great guy, nice guy. But and so initially he started giving me ideas, and he said, why don't you give us, pass a fee and we'll come up with a master plan. And that's what I did. So I paid him a fee and they came up with a master plan, and that's really what's here now. Not exactly, but very close. So we have probably the largest collection of books on Italian American culture in existence. Now, it used to be up on our third floor. One of the first things he said is, we got to get the library out of here so we can, because we need the space to make money, you know, because you got to make money,
right, to
be able to do the mission, to stay open and be able to do the mission. So we were able to move the library to the Jefferson Parish East Bank Regional Library, thanks to the help of John Young and Mike Yenny and some people. They helped us out. And it's great. It's open there. It's open 7 days a week. It gets a lot of activity. Unfortunately, the curator who went with the library, Mr. Sal Cirio, just passed away 2 months ago. Mm-hmm. He was like a resource, just a great resource on Italian history and genealogy and everything. But anyway, so, all right, so we got the plan. But they were going to be way too expensive for us to use because, I mean, they're doing these big, big, big museums in India, Las Vegas, giant museums. So fortunately, we were able to meet a museum designer here in New Orleans, four or five blocks away on South Peter Street, called Synergy Designs. So I'd say in about, 17. Now, so all of a sudden, the years are going by.
Right.
We finally got her to, say, redesign the first floor, which included our jazz exhibit, highlighting not only Nicola Rocca, the creator of jazz, but Louis Prima. And we have a wall of fame down there. I don't know if you saw it.
Yeah.
We have 250 Italian-American musicians highlighted. And that was a major effort. I had to hire these people to do all the research, to get all their names correct, to get the instruments they played or the different things they did, their dates of, you know, birth and death and all that stuff. So we have a great resource there. Synergy helped us come up with the first floor plan, final plan. And then so it took us a year, say, to redo the first floor.
Mm-hmm.
Then I was very happy with what they did. So I said, well, look, I think y'all should go ahead and we'll do the actual museum. We're going to redo the museum. So the museum was originally on the second floor. It was what was called an artifact museum.
Mm-hmm.
It was just artifacts. It was
and
things.
That's how I remember it.
It was pictures. It was, different works of art and family pictures and things like that. But it was just artifacts. So the new museum was going to be a narrative museum that would kind of tell a story of the immigrant experience. Leaving Sicily, why they left, how they got here, what were the conditions there, here. And then it goes on, like what they brought here, what they did when they got here. And then it's the evolution all the way till, say, the present day. And it does include some artifacts of, you know, like some artwork. But it talks just about kind of just how the culture developed here. Anyway, we hired Synergy Design to design the museum, fabricate all the new exhibits. So I started in early 18 the renovation and the demolition and everything. So because we had to demolish the old museum, we had to do a bunch of work to the building and get everything ready. And I hired an architect kind of supervisor to help us kind of supervise what we were doing. And so it took pretty much the whole year. And so by the end of 19, as we were finishing and everything was looking great, we had a big opening party. I brought Dean Martin's daughter in, Dina Martin. She came in and performed right here. We had a special little orchestra. And then Christmas came. And then really Mardi Gras. And then we went in full scale into the pandemic.
Right.
So then we basically had to kind of just... not shut down, because we never did really shut down, but
sure.
But we couldn't do anything.
Right.
You know, we didn't get any customers. We couldn't do any of our programs,
yeah, your events.
We did continue to teach on Zoom.
Yep, and I saw, I was looking at your website, and we'll put
all
links
to
that.
So that's a quick history of how it all happened.
Yeah, you know, and so what's, I remember it sort of in the old days, and just having just run through it just now, it does have that sort of, it feels a little bit like the World War II Museum. This is a much smaller museum. And incidentally, I think New Orleans is full of wonderful small museums. I've talked about the Pharmacy Museum before. And I think in its own way, so your museum is one floor, but it's decent-sized floor. I love how you are greeted with immigrants, basically. You know, just like you would have been, I think my grandparents immigrated right around 1899, my great-grandparents, 1899, 1904, right in that, you know, range. It was a time of a lot of Italian immigrants coming to New Orleans. You go into the museum, one of the first things that caught my eye, Anthony and I were looking at, is the pictures of the St. Joseph's Day altars, still very big in New Orleans. I instantly saw you had the picture of the altar that's up there has the lemons, which are really important in Italian history. I did an interview with Justin Nystrom, who wrote a book, I think it's called Sicilian New Orleans or Sicilians in New Orleans. And he starts that book off about the lemon being so key to the Italian culture. I also saw a cake there of Padre Pio, which I remember as a kid. My My great-great-grandmother, or my great-grandmother, who only spoke Italian, always had like a little shrine to Padre Pio in her living room. And then you kind of progress. You have an interactive display where you can touch your last name and look to see. I didn't get to do it, but I'm a Bologna, but we are from Palermo. So you can really kind of see the map and kind of trace your roots along with studying it. As you had before in the museum, one of the things you guys do is honor Italian-American athletes, in addition to the musicians you mentioned. And so there's a whole exhibit there.
We have our Hall of Fame.
Here, the Hall of Fame.
Where we've inducted about 120 people into the Italian-American Sports Hall of Fame.
So. You have a little exhibit about Sam Cortese, the Roman candy man.
Yeah, that's right.
His son and now his grandson are running that business. I got to speak to his grandson not long ago and talk about the history there. And that really gets to sort of the history of immigrants in New Orleans and how a portion of the French Quarter was called Little Sicily, Little Italy.
Little Palermo.
Right? And Sam Cortese has his
French
roots
Quarter
there.
Was really Little Palermo.
Yeah, and particularly that side on the closer to Esplanade, right? Mm-hmm. And the French Market and the food stalls and the fruit vendors. So, yeah.
Well, it was my feeling, I said, it's not big. Of course, the museum starts on the ground floor with the jazz exhibit, and then that area by the elevator where we have some of the original early Italian Americans who were explorers back in the 1600s, 1700s, 1800s and stuff like that. We have the early businessmen. That's all on the ground floor. And then the top floor, the third floor, it's not huge, but the quality, I said, it's small, but we can make it really good just with what we have, the space we have, and I think that's what we did. You know, because sometimes size, I like quality over quantity, to be honest, in everything I do, quality over quantity. So, because they were talking about maybe expanding, we were going to maybe expand the room, and I said, no, this is good, because we want to keep this open space right here, the patio here, and...
I think you guys did a great job. It tells the history concisely, but it tells the history. We should also mention, what's the address of where we're at right now?
537 South Peters Street. We're next to the Lowe's Hotel. We're across from Manning's Restaurant. And we're right next to the Piazza d'Italia.
And it's a perfect location if you're coming for, say, Mardi Gras. Although Mardi Gras is crazy, right? But, you know, during the daytime, the parades pass right near here. So it's a good opportunity. If you're coming in for a Saints game, you're right in here in the Warehouse District, Central Business District. So you're not far probably from... where you're going to stay if you're visiting and walking to the games. It's a good opportunity to come stop in and check it out. But you guys do a lot more besides the museum. We're sitting in a ballroom space that I know you use for your own events, but it's also available for other events.
This room here is called the Renaissance Room. And, you know, we host all kind of events here. We had 60 people here yesterday. Doing having a luncheon or a luncheon meeting. They're a group that's down here from up east. Mm-hmm. And we have weddings scheduled. We have baby showers. We do a lot of things here. It's a really neat space. It's different. You know, we have a nice little outdoor patio back here that overlooks the Piazza d'Italia. Very convenient. There's parking next door and right, you know, in the other part of the block here. So, yeah. So we do. That's one of the things we do.
You know, in that sense, too, it kind of reminds me of sort of getting back to your original point of kind of the club atmosphere. And one of the things I did mention about the museum, you have a banner there of what was at one time the Benevolent Society. Mm-hmm. I'm right now reading a book about Economy Hall. And, you know, in the black community, there was such a need for benevolent societies because there was no one else to support them. And in its own ways... the ethnic communities here in New Orleans and in other places, certainly including the Italians, first generation, had to provide for themselves, right? Were subject to discrimination and didn't always have the opportunities of other citizens. And so they formed a benevolent society here in New Orleans.
Well, those clubs help their members. And so it was the clubs were really made up of people from the same towns in Sicily. So you came from a certain town. Either maybe Palermo or wherever, you know, there's so many, Trapani, Marsala, whatever. So y'all formed a club, and then you helped each other with housing, jobs, medical, legal help, and even burial help. So, you know, a lot of the clubs wound up having their own tombs
right.
in Metairie Cemetery, where there's still 12 Italian-American tombs.
Yeah, and I think that's one of the things that's interesting about all ethnicities sort of ended up doing that to take care of their own, right?
Right, that's right. In
part because you're trying to assimilate and trying to come into a community, and that's difficult. And then in part, sometimes there's discrimination. And yeah, you see the same thing across. And so I think that's a really interesting thing. In addition, you guys offer language classes.
Mm-hmm. We have 4 sessions a year where we, you know, in which we teach Italian language. We have a wonderful teacher. So in each session, we have about eight or nine different sections. And we teach like beginner 1, beginner 2, mm-hmm. intermediate 1, 2, 3. And she's very attuned to her students. She's tries to make sure that they move along from, you know, one level to the next. And so we offer Zoom classes and live classes.
Yeah.
And they're popular, very popular. So we just started our summer session about a week, 10 days ago.
Yeah, I saw it on the website. And again, I'll link to that. I know they were very popular before COVID, and like so many places, you guys had to adjust, and mm-hmm. the world got introduced to Zoom, right? And so now that's a part, but it's also opened it up to people. You know, it may be more convenient for them.
And we have a lot of people from New York.
Yeah?
Yeah, and up in that east, up east, New York, New Jersey. Yeah, because it's reasonable. The price is reasonable. And again, the teacher's really super served by likes her, and she's really good.
Yeah. So. You know, so that was one of the reasons I've wanted to do this episode selfishly for a long time because of my Italian background. But we have a lot of listeners in the New York area, a lot of listeners in the Philadelphia area. And I know they travel, particularly if the Saints happen to be playing, the Eagles or the Jets or the Giants or whatever. And there's a lot of similarities, I think, between particularly Philadelphia and New Orleans and some of the neighborhoods in New York. And so I think this is a resource and the kind of place somebody would want to just another tie into your culture and your history. One of the other things we were talking about again before we hit record is dual citizenship. And you guys have a program to help people explore the genealogy and go through what is a long, sometimes arduous process.
We've been developing that program for about 5 years, but I think we finally have it where we're very good at it. You know, some Italian Americans are eligible. It all depends on when the ancestor who came from Italy, when they gave up their Italian citizenship. Because right. back in those days, when you became an American citizen, you had to give up your Italian citizenship. So as long as the next generation was born before the immigrant gave up their citizenship. Mm-hmm. Then everyone below is really an Italian citizen, but it has to be reestablished through a lot of paperwork
yeah.
and red tape, and it takes a while. But it's an interesting process, and it's a rewarding process. And so we help people. I just hung up with a lady from New Jersey, who I told her to email Andrea, the lady here who handles that, and we'll send her a questionnaire that'll ask her all kind of questions about her ancestors and her parents and grandparents, whatever, and from there we'll be able to determine her eligibility. We have quite a few. We must be helping about 50 people right now, not all active, but we have about 20-25 active people we're helping. And there's another 30 or so that are kind of dormant. We're waiting on documents, or we're waiting for them to come back to us. But if we really started to advertise this, we could have
And I think you will likely get some from this podcast.
I'm sure we will.
We have a really good friend up in Boston who's been working through it on her own for years and years.
Yes.
And I have a cousin, a direct cousin, who just started the process with you guys, I think, and is already further along. You know, it really makes a difference to have. So that's a tremendous resource, and a resource you don't have to be in New Orleans to access, right? Again, I don't know if it's a good or a bad thing to flood you guys with that kind of work, but it's important to people, and it's important to tie in. And I know from experience from my friend in Boston who's been trying for 6 or 7 years, and, you know, she's trying to figure out the research of what she needs to do, much less do it. And you guys have an expertise in that. plus a passion for it, you know, and right, continuing
right.
the
we're going to really try to help her.
The Italian
yeah, if
culture.
You ever contact us, we'll send her a questionnaire.
Yeah.
And that'll kind of spell out, well, she'll have to list all her ancestors.
Right.
And, you know, if it's great-grandparents, grandparents, depending on who came over, whatever.
Right, right.
Birth, marriage, death certificates, things like that, and which it'll ask which documents they have, which ones they don't have, so we can kind of guide the whole process, and it's you know, and we like to do it.
I think it's a wonderful service, and again, it gets back to that people want to be connected to their roots, you know, and through the museum and the cultural center, you guys continue to preserve the history, but also help future generations, right?
You know, our mission statement is to honor and celebrate the American-Italian culture, past, present, and future.
And I should have asked you that right up front.
Yeah, that's
right?
All right. No, that's
and right. That's a good mission. It sums it up, right? And again, you do that through your programs. You do it through the...
Well, we honor through the museum.
The museum,
and,
yeah.
And, you know, through our library and all. And we celebrate it through all our different programs, you know. Of course, we, before the COVID, we were sponsoring trips to Italy. So the COVID shut that down for 2 years. Then this year, things looked like we were going to get back on track. Uh-huh. And then, unfortunately, the problem in the Ukraine uh-huh. cropped up, and that kind of scared everybody off for a while. So, but we're getting geared up for next year now, for 2023.
Okay.
We have a bunch of trips planned, and our trips are very reasonable. I've been on, I think, almost all of them that we've done, a lot to Sicily. The week-long trips to Sicily are the most popular because, you know, 97% of the Italians in Louisiana mm-hmm. trace their roots to Sicily.
Right.
But we've had people from other, well, there's a lot of Sicilians in New York,
yeah,
New
yeah.
Jersey, all over, you know, yeah. A lot of them half Sicilian, full Sicilian, whatever. So, I forgot where we were, but
yeah, anyway, but getting back to the trips,
great.
Yeah.
And let's see, what else are we doing? Of course, we have our Sports Hall of Fame gala in January,
mm-hmm. yep.
or now it's in early February, and that's where it's an induction ceremony, and so we induct people to the Hall of Fame, but we also give about 6 other awards out to prominent Italian Americans, civic awards, medical, entertainment. Like that, okay, and so that's a big event. It's fun. Dina Martin usually comes and sings. We have some other celebrities that come. You know, it's just a fun thing, and it's usually at the New Orleans Hilton. It's a lot of fun. So then we've done about 5 opera in the piazza events.
Yeah.
That's always in June, and that started because I had I was in Rome. Maybe 10 years ago in the Piazza Navona. Those of y'all been to Rome know what
yep.
that is. That's
yep.
that long, narrow. It used to be, they said it was a chariot racetrack
oh, okay.
at
that
one
makes
time.
Sense.
That's
that,
why
right?
it has
the
that
shape
oval
of it?
Shape.
Right.
Anyway,
okay.
So I was there one Saturday night, and they had the stage set up, and they had a bunch of singers, you know, opera singers, mm-hmm. taking turns singing opera. And I said, man, this would work perfect at the Piazza d'Italia. And so within a few years, we did the first one, and it's been very popular. It's been very popular.
Yeah.
And we have a gentleman who was the former director of the New Orleans Opera. He arranges all the music, plays the piano. We have usually have a violin and a cello, whatever. So those are really popular. All right, so then what else?
Maybe talk for just a minute about the Piazza d'Italia, because it is right next door.
Okay, where this all started,
I know your
actually.
Father yeah. was very instrumental in that.
That's where all this started. So back in probably right around 50 years ago, some of the Italian groups back then, which included my dad, they wanted to create a monument to, I think, to their aunt, to their parents and the people who came early and worked hard. So a monument to the Italians and the Italian Americans. So now where you're sitting now in the warehouse district, for those who don't know, 50 years ago, this was still kind of a seedy area.
Yeah.
You know, this was no big deal here, you know.
Right, before the World's Fair.
Yeah, nothing like it is now. This was back in the early 70s. So Mr. Cannizzaro owned the Likes building, which is now the Lowe's Hotel. And he also owned the entire block. See?
Okay.
So, and of course, he was close with my dad and some of the other Italians. And he was now in the process of creating Canal Place.
Okay.
Okay, so Canal Place, which is only two, three blocks from here, he had assembled 8 square blocks, and he needed the streets that separated the blocks to finish the assembly, so that he could then start building the office buildings, hotel, shopping mall, all that stuff. So this is where my dad's group got between Moon Landrieu, who was the mayor, who was a great mayor of the city, and Cannizzaro, and they made a deal to swap. So the city gave Mr. Cannizzaro the streets, and he gave them the rest of this whole block, with the assumption that it would become the Piazza d'Italia, a monument to the American, to the Italians and American Italians. So, and part of it then they raised $10 million 50 years ago, which was a lot of money. It would be like $100 million now to do this whole project. The fountain, the square.
The architecture.
And I guess the architecture, everything. And they hired one of the most famous fountain designers in the world, Charles Moore, to design the fountain. As some of y'all might know, this is an award-winning fountain. When it was first done, it became world famous. It was on all the major books, architectural books all over the world. And now, so we have the fountain, we have the gathering area in the center, and then there's the parking lots that surround it. Well, it's all part of the piazza. It's always been envisioned that buildings would be built around the fountain that would cooperate with the fountain, that would work together.
So right, sure.
Maybe a shopping area, an apartment house, a hotel, whatever. So, but this whole area is called the Piazza d'Italia. And that was, so it was finished in 1978. Mm. I think they started around 72, 73 with the planning, and they finished it in 78. And then they decided to build this cultural center next to it. That really didn't get done until 84, 85, because everything takes time. They had to raise money and come up with the plan and all. So, but that was really the first thing, and then this was second, and now we have this beautiful complex.
And you're right. I mean, you know, the World's Fair was a financial failure, went into bankruptcy, but if there was a lasting impact, it's that it helped transform this area where we're sitting. Because it was still old, dilapidated warehouses.
Mm-hmm. Even though it was coming.
It was coming,
but it probably sped it up.
Yeah, it certainly did. I think, and that has lived on, right? So, yeah, I think it's a really unique. The piazza is very unique. It's very bright. It is a shame that the parking lots are there and that the sort of businesses that were envisioned didn't wrap around it, but there are businesses nearby.
Well, it can still happen. It's not that it's over with.
But sure.
The city makes so much money on the parking
that
they're not in any rush to do anything with it. But
in recent years nearby, I think, again, one of my longtime partners was the old 77 Hotel right across the street there, and some businesses have cropped up around it. And again, you have this. You have Wino, the Wine Institute of New Orleans, right around the corner, which is a really great place to stop in and sample different wines.
Now, there's a misconception that the piazza doesn't get used that much, but in reality, the Lowe's hosts many events in the piazza.
Yes.
Because we overlook it. I'd say at least weekly or more than once a week, they have parties, weddings, and small events.
I think that's a great point. Yeah, absolutely. Yeah.
So it does get used. It's just not a lot of... I mean, we do the only really big public events there, but so far anyway. Yeah.
I think the opera has been a great way to draw New Orleanians' attention to it, right? Because it's easy if you're not down here a lot or you're whatever, you may not even realize that it's there. But I'm with you. I do work not far from here, and the Lowe's uses it all the time for events.
All the time
we see it.
Hey, let me mention this.
Yeah.
We do have a membership program.
Okay.
And we have a little membership drive going now, and of course people can go to our website, theamericanitalianculturalcenter.com, and join, and there are benefits that we get and they get, and they can kind of become part of the family, and
Yeah, we'll put,
we would appreciate it.
We'll put links to all that in the show notes for today's show, which will be at beyondbourbonst.com/165. We'll link up again to the museum and to the membership drive. And, you know, mostly what I want people to know is that not only is this a fun place to come check out the history of Italians, American Italians and the Thai in New Orleans, but also all the other services you guys offer. I know you're busy. I appreciate the time. It's been really good. It's great to see the changes because I haven't been in here since COVID. It's a really bright space. It's welcoming. It's a great, again, longtime listeners have heard me talk about some of the smaller museums in the city. You could make easily a fun weekend of just visiting the small museums in the city. And I would put this on there. You have other places like the Pharmacy Museum. You have the Irish Cultural Center. You have just so many. You have the Saints Hall of Fame Museum when it's open on game days, but there's so many, and this is a place, particularly if you're interested in not only Italian history, but just sort of the cultures of New Orleans. There was such a big immigrant population that came, I think about the Irish Channel, right, which was full of Italians and Irish and German all living together. In fact, you got that space right there with the churches, you know, all right around each other. Today we call it the Irish Channel, but it was a very multicultural area. And you guys help preserve that culture. So thank you so much for what you guys do. Thank you for continuing on the legacy that your dad started. You know, I know
my,
that.
My dad and a lot of other great guys, too.
Yeah, yeah.
Dr. Ricardo, Sal Panzica, so many of them. Carlo DiMatteo, who's still living, actually, in his 90s. So many people. Gaspar Scirro just passed, one of our great Italian leaders. We had so many people. So, yeah, but my dad, he was a little bit of the catalyst, but it took a lot of them, and a lot of them worked on it. So
one of the things I know they did, and I know you've continued, is to try to capture the histories. I know there's a lot of recorded histories of Italians.
The immigrants.
Yeah, the immigrants.
We have 200 interviews that my dad did 40 years ago with Italian immigrants. So, and that's all digitized, and we're trying to get it to where we can make it available for people to hear. And like I carry the interview of my grandmother, I carry it in my phone so I can actually hear her voice.
That's amazing. You know?
And that's amazing, right? She's been dead 37 years. But I can hear her talk and talk about Sicily and what they did and how they came here and all. So it's really, that's really great.
That's awesome. When I found out about that program of recording, my great-grandmother, I knew her. She only spoke Italian, and she wrote out the family history in Italian. I still know painfully little Italian, but when I was a kid, I could read it. I couldn't speak it, but I could read it because I grew up with that notebook that she had put together, and it was part of our family legacy and tradition of that book. I don't know if it got
destroyed. Italian or Sicilian?
That's a great question.
Because I do have someone that could translate it for you, even if it's Sicilian.
Really? I'll have to ask my dad that.
He's an academic guy. He can translate Sicilian. He's fluent in Sicilian and Italian.
But we don't have the voice, and that, you know, that, like you're saying, it's part of why I love podcasting, is you capture the stories, but you capture the voice. Today we have so many pictures, and we have, right, you know, everybody's got all these pictures, but what you don't have is the voices. Again, that's one of the things you guys did with all those interviews. That's amazing. Again, I just want to thank you guys for the time. I appreciate it. I want to thank you so much for keeping this alive, the traditions and the culture, and continuing to put that forth in the community. Again, we'll share the links. We'll make sure everybody knows about it. I would definitely encourage you to come stop in. Come spend a half an hour here or more, but come spend some time, see what it's like. We didn't even get into, there's some great exhibits about various Italian Americans. There's a terrific exhibit about an Italian who came to the United States to fight in World War II on the side of the Allies. A really great story. And also, if you're going to go to the World War II Museum, which is not far, it's a really interesting kind of tie to that. There's just so much here for such a, you know, relatively small space. I just really appreciate what you guys are doing. So thank you.
It was nice to meet you, Mark Bologna.
Yes,
I've known some of your family for many, many years. That's an old family name, old Italian family name here. It's a well-respected name. And thank you for coming. This has been a lot of fun.
Thank you, Frank. I appreciate it.
Okay.
Again, we'll let everybody know in the show notes how you can find out more. Thanks to our sponsors, as always. Thanks to you, the listeners. And with that, I'm going to turn it over to the girls to close us out.
New episodes are available every other Wednesday. If you're enjoying the podcast, please share it with someone else who loves New Orleans as much as you do. Until next time, laissez le bon temps rouler.
Thanks for listening to the Beyond Bourbon Street podcast. Find us anytime at beyondbourbonst.com.